I'm Adam.
And I'm Mike.
Welcome to The Dad Experience,
a podcast where dads can connect
and openly share stories.
Here's what to expect on this episode of The Dad Experience.
The goal is definitely to leave Dad 2.0 with a whole, you know, like you're shot out of a cannon, to really get out there and be the best person you can be the best partner, be the best father, be the best writer, be the best person at your job. I mean, there's a whole spectrum of fatherhood out there in terms of, you know, people, men with full-time jobs, part-time jobs.
Dad Experience.
Welcome again to another exciting episode of The Dad Experience. Very excited today about this episode. I've been trying to get in touch with Doug because I know he's got a lot of great information to share with our listeners. So today we have Doug French on the show. Doug is a writer, speaker, and a single dad who began blogging as the laid-off dad in 2003. He also now writes cartoons at MrDougFrench.com. He has been profiled or written for several magazines and newspapers, including the New York Times, Slate, and Huffington Post. He is also a contributor to Michigan Public Radio and frequently speaks at conferences such as Blog Her, Mom 2.0, and Bliss Dom. Really excited to talk to Doug as well because he's also a founder of Dad 2.0, which is a great resource and a conference for dads to go as well as moms and get information and just connect with other parents out there and going through similar things that we all are going through with parenthood. So lots of great information. Really excited to talk to Doug. Welcome, Doug, to the show.
Hey, good to be here, Adam. Thanks for having me.
It's always fun to have a fellow Michigander on the show. It's not that I don't enjoy having people from all over the world. It just seems like it's just like home more, I guess, that's all.
Well, yeah, we just have that hidden notice to each other that if anybody's not from Michigan, they can just screw off.
yeah. It might have been.
I've only been here about 8 years, but I've learned a few secret handshakes over the years. So
yeah. You know, once you're from Michigan, there's this, and I'm sure it's like this everywhere. I have never lived anywhere else, so I can't attest to this, but I know that I have a great pride for living in the state of Michigan. I love Michigan. I love things Detroit. I love things UP. I love things Northern Michigan. It's just, I love the food. And I'm sure it's like that anywhere you live and you're proud of your culture, but it's just so nice to have that and have that, you know, to be able to talk to somebody about that sometimes.
So. Yeah. Well, it's definitely been an experience here. I mean, I had some experience, I had an old girlfriend from Traverse City way back in the day, so I did some visitation here, spent a beautiful Labor Day weekend up in Traverse City for a wedding, and when the opportunity came to move here, we moved here because my ex got into U of M business school.
Okay.
And we were living in Manhattan at the time, and we were thinking, and we'd already split up, but we weren't sure we wanted to raise kids in the city even if we'd stayed together, so we figured, where can we go? But we can, you know, we can get a couple of houses and the kids can go back and forth and we can be less helicoptery because living in the city, I don't know anything about raising kids in New York. I'm a suburban kid myself. So when the opportunity arose to bring the kids to a little nerdy college town, we jumped at it and it's been great.
Yeah. And that, you know, Ann Arbor's in U of M area is a great, cool area to be for kids and adults. There's a lot to do. And this is coming from a Spartan grad saying all this. Ann Arbor's a great city and it's a lot of fun to go and visit that area. And we've spent a lot of time there. Actually, the reason I started this podcast is a little bit of U of M background kind of thrown into it. My daughter had we couldn't leave the house because when she was born, we found out she had a complete AVSD, which is a large hole in our heart.
We
found that out at about, I think we found it at the, maybe it was the 15-week ultrasound. I can't remember now exactly. It's all a blur. I don't want to talk out of turn there, but because I don't want to make the wife mad for not remembering. But we really couldn't leave the house because she couldn't get sick. So I said, I know nothing about being a dad. Other than having education classes to deal with children as a teacher, I know nothing. And a lot of that doesn't, some of it goes hand in hand, but not all of it goes hand in hand. So I decided, what better way to do it than to start a podcast out there and talk to other dads? Because at the very least, I'm going to learn a lot. So, and it has, it's kind of expanded now. We've got 100 episodes here and my daughter's healthy and this has continued. So it's kind of neat to be able to do that. So we've got a little bit of a tie because she had that surgery at U of M. They took great care of her and she's doing well now at 3 years old. So
that's fantastic. And that's the type of story that, that should be told. I mean, I think it dovetails well with our current issue of Fatherhood on Friday, which is all about the advice, the best advice we never got, because, you know, you never know what you're in for when you become a dad. I mean, I know I always wanted to be one, but for everything you think you can anticipate, there are a dozen things you can't. And it's just fascinating to understand how your life just multiplies fractally forever and ever with your heart walking outside your chest. And when you have, how you react to stuff you had no idea was going to happen. And I can only imagine this it's going to be a better bonding experience between, you know, you and your wife and your daughter having gone through all that and come out on the other side. And that's something newer dads who are in your position or in the position you used to be need to hear. So, I mean, one of the best things about the web still is the opportunity to pay this stuff forward. So, that's a great, thanks for telling that story. I mean, I think that's something that people are going to find a lot of utility from.
And I hope so. And, you know, I found through talking to other parents and other dads, it's interesting that, you know, ours may have been this heart issue or, you know, whatever it could be. And it could be a broken arm for a dad sometime. Everybody's issue and things that they're afraid of or things they weren't sure they were going to experience, it's huge. And I try and remember that. And I tell when somebody will ask me, like, what's the craziest thing you went through, whatever, you're going to think the worst experience is going to be the worst experience, no matter what it could be. It could be a small thing like, you know, breaking a finger, I guess. I don't know. And that could have been so traumatic, but to not belittle it and embrace it and try and learn from it. You know, people are like, I can't imagine what you went through with your daughter. Yeah. But even if it was that, or could have been something even more minor, we're always learning and we're evolving and we're growing. And it's just learning from those experiences. And that's kind of my mantra, is going, no problem is too big. No problem is too small. Learn from it, move on, and share. Like you said, share through the internet, pay it forward, help each other out, because somebody may be going through something and can use even a little tidbit of information, even, you know, a 1 second snippet of whatever you did, and it can help somebody. So it's so important. I feel like with the internet, like you said, and more people like what you guys do, that we're going to get into with Dad 2.0 and blogging, that males and men are starting to embrace being a dad rather than being the stereotypical Homer Simpson dad that doesn't do much. The partner takes care of whatever needs to get done. Those days, I feel like, are hopefully starting to go away, or maybe with internet, we're seeing it change a little bit. But I think it's so important to keep sharing and embracing and getting in touch with those things.
Absolutely. So, I think the benefit of perspective is something that we undervalue sometimes. And anytime you can just kind of, especially if you're on social media a lot, it's really easy to get caught up in what people are chatting about. You know, in some cases, the truth can be whitewashed a bit. The truth can be pigeonholed or categorized in one way or another. And getting out and speaking with real people, I mean, that's kind of why I love being in the conference business, because in a time when our communications are becoming a bit more sterile, you know, people who like to texting, I think it's been proven, uses about, I mean, less than 10% of our communicative powers. You know, there's no body language, there's no inflection, there's no, there's just we communicate so many ways other than with the written word. And by relying on something that's as static as that, we're really doing ourselves a disservice. So anytime you can meet somebody face to face, put a face to a name and become friends with them, at least even just really strong acquaintances, that's going to lead you through the entire year. And that's kind of like why Dad 2.0, every welcome party we have is like a reunion in ways, because we've kept in touch with each other all year long. But it's just good to put it, you know, be face to face and, you know, throw your arm around somebody, shake a hand, bend an elbow, and remember that we're all just, we're all in this together.
Yeah, For sure. Absolutely. And, you know, before we start getting into some of the Dad 2.0 stuff, we always like to start our show off so our audience kind of gets a little bit of a feel. What's the makeup of your household, or who lives with you at home? How does your family kind of tick, and how does it function on a daily basis?
Well, funny you ask that. How does it function? I often wonder the same thing. it's not traditional, I guess, in the sense we're a high functioning divorced couple. We've been actually divorced longer than we were married, so I think we really found a way to operate as friends and as co-parents and complement each other. Both my sons were born in New York City, where I met my ex-wife, and we were married for 9 years. And then we split up. We stayed in New York for a while, and that wasn't working. And so the opportunity to move here to Ann Arbor came up, and it's been great. And I think we've cohabitated, not cohabitated. We have cooperated well, and because it's the main thing is you can be we can both be fluid with our schedules. I mean, it's been 50-50 when the kids were younger. And now the kids are a little older, and we're letting them have a bit more room to explore their own things. And so that schedule becomes a bit more fluid. We'll be heading out. I'll have them for a week. We're going out for the Thanksgiving to my parents out in New Jersey. So, we're just my co-parent and I live about 45 minutes apart. And it's weird. This year there's two households. And two high schoolers in two different high schools with two different high school schedules. So we're basically, this is the 1 year where we're experiencing maximum permutational chaos. Other than that, though, it's cool.
It is. And you know, it's neat. The more I talk to more and more parents, it's refreshing to hear that the co-parenting thing, I hear more often than not that folks are able to work with their schedules and work together as co-parents rather than like have, I'm going to do this with the child or my children. And I'm going to, on the other side, they're going to do this and it's never going to communicate. And it's so refreshing to hear that. I'm not in that experience. So I don't want to claim that I know about this. So, but it's refreshing as a person hearing it, that that's happening and that people are doing that and making it about their children, making it about the family to make it work. It's really refreshing and just hearing what you guys do and how you moved together. Didn't you? You said you moved together. You might've talked about this off the air, but did you guys move together after you were divorced back to,
that's
over
right,
here to
yeah.
Michigan? I mean, that doesn't happen very often when you think about it, I'm just surfacing it. I don't know it. You know, stats or anything like that, but that's pretty impressive that you guys can do that and work together to be successful parents, which is so awesome.
Well, we have put some work into it, but we're also very lucky. I consider myself very lucky because neither one of us wanted, you know, were to be vindictive enough to separate our kids from either parent. You know, we just didn't want to be married anymore. And that's a really important step because I know a lot of divorces go a whole hell of a lot worse. And one of the things I will say, I mean, this isn't right for everybody either, but one of the things that helped us a lot is after we got divorced, I mean, I was a dad blogger. This is, I started dad blogging in 2003 when my older son was about 15 months old. And I just got laid off from a job. And so I started this job, this blog called Laid Off Dad. And my ex was a blogger too. She was an advice blogger for moms. And so when we split up, we actually created a blog for a while about co-parenting. You know, so much about writing and blogging and doing anything, putting out anything into the world is trying to create the content that doesn't exist already, you know, that you want to find on your own. So if there aren't resources that you want to consult, then, you know, create your own or create a conduit so that others might have them. And we started this blog about co-parenting called When the Flames Go Up. And we wrote about our experience it lasted about a year. And we were interviewed about it once. And she said, the interviewer said, how do you see this ending? And we said, well, we hope that our divorce gets boring enough. There's nothing worth writing about anymore. And that's exactly what happened. So, you know, we wrote about it and we got a lot. I learned a lot about her after we got divorced, more than I ever knew when we were married, which tells you a bit about whether we should have stayed married. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I think it helped. We bared our souls a bit. And I think once we had the footing to do that, once we felt secure enough to do that, I don't know, kind of, it was very intimate in its way. And it really helped us understand each other better, why we got married in the first place. And I think if so many people who react, in a more hostile way, do it out of insecurity. You know, they do it out of a lack of knowledge or a fear of the future, and a lack of resources to pursue their own ends. And so as you move along in the divorce process, the more you know, the less fear you'll have. So get out there, learn everything you can, and you can come at this like an adult and get over the hurt and move forward. So that's the only thing, the best thing that I think I can pass on from my whole experience. And, you know, I'm living proof you can be out on the other side and it can still work.
Yeah. And it's great. And like I said, it's nice to hear those stories and for people that might be on the edge and not quite sure to hear what you're saying, that it is possible. It takes work, obviously, but it's possible. And that, maybe it is better for the parents, as well as maybe it's better for obviously for the children too. So, it's always nice to hear.
We'll see about that. I don't know. My 17-year-old is very excited to go live someplace that doesn't involve two households. And that's fair.
Maybe that,
you know,
that is fair. Totally that is fair.
He wants to have one place to live, and I don't blame him. I'd be the same way. So
yeah.
I don't recommend it as a thing to do. I think if I had my life to live over, I would rather not be a divorced parent. But
yes.
You know, if we could make it work, and be as amicable about it as possible, and make sure, you know, we don't talk trash about the other parent to the kids. Right. You know, do your best to be the adults in the room, then, you know, it could work out okay.
Mm-hmm. Yes, for sure. So, you know, what led me to kind of finding you, Doug, is this great thing that you guys put on, Dad 2.0. So you are a co-founder of Dad 2.0. Can you tell us a little bit about this, what Dad 2.0 is and the different things that you guys do?
Sure. Well, we this is our ninth year coming up. We started in 2012. We were a small conference. We brought about 200 people in initially, and we were in Austin. And it was kind of funny because we scheduled our first conference to overlap slightly with South by Southwest, because we knew a lot of the people we wanted to speak were going to be in Austin anyway at South by. And so we figured if we sent a car for them, they could come over and speak with us as well. And it worked. A lot of them were able to come over and speak, and that really gave us a boost. But we're an annual conference. We meet every year usually in February. It's been February ever since that first conference. And we are about, essentially, we're about medias and marketers and fathers, how we're depicted in the media, how we use media to try and put forth a stronger idea of what fatherhood can be, to give fathers, especially those who don't feel prepared to be fathers, a sense of community so that they have a resource, they have opportunity to meet other dads and talk through their experiences, and to acknowledge that men are vulnerable, to kind of pursue a whole new level of masculinity that embraces the fact that to be a dad is to be a vulnerable person. Like I say, it's your heart walks around outside of your chest, and that's a hard thing for a lot of us to process. So, you know, we deal with a lot of influencer marketing. We have lots of great corporate sponsors who have worked with us over the years. Dove Men Plus Care being our primary one. They've been our title sponsor since 2013. So, you know, we work with them with the influencer marketing part. You know, but in order to create a blog or anything, a podcast or a YouTube channel or anything, you need to work on being a better writer and a better father and a better man. And so we want to build up that bedrock. And then if you want to go and be an influencer and try to make, you know, some money that some of these influencers are making, you can aspire to do that too. And we talk a lot about how social media works and how the metrics work, how search engine optimization works. And how to create the best product that could, you know, ultimately bring the best results to your brand partnership.
Yeah. So it sounds like it's a great program. I myself have not been able to make it yet. My goal is to get there maybe even this year. But since you've kind
of coming at him, we've established that.
that's the goal. So I'm definitely going to try and make it there this year. I'm really excited. I'm always jealous, and I get like this, almost like this, not a, I don't want to call it a hangover because it's not a hangover because I'm not there afterwards, but I see all the people having fun because a lot of the people that I overlap with here on the Dad Experience podcast, are people that go to Dad 2.0. And as a matter of fact, I've done some different, engagements speaking in Michigan and things like that, where people are like, you got to go, you got to make it happen. And I see it and I get so jealous, I guess is the word I'm looking for, because it just seems like a cool place for dads to go, like you said, to kind of break down those barriers and how we are as dads portrayed in media and in social events and places and societally. And it's nice that there's like-minded people there to kind of, you know, find their place and to be together and work together. So I always get jealous, I guess is the word I'm looking for, because it just seems like there's just a wealth of knowledge there from the folks that you get coming in, from the speakers to just the people attending that you meet, I would imagine. So,
well, the goal is definitely to leave Dad 2.0 with a whole, you know, like you're shot out of a cannon, to really get out there and be the best person you can be the best partner, be the best father, be the best writer, be the best person at your job. I mean, there's a whole spectrum of fatherhood out there in terms of, you know, people, men with full-time jobs, part-time jobs, stay-at-home fathers, same-sex partnerships. We're dealing a lot with balancing work and life and making it easier for parents to have children with, you know, paid parental leave. It's fascinating. I've done some research recently about how our birth rate in America is just plummeting.
Mm-hmm.
And it's fascinating when you think about all the factors that are making it really hard for people to become parents. It's just become hard. It's hard to educate a child. It's hard to feed a child. It's hard to insure a child. It's hard to have a child. It's expensive to have a child. It's, you know, there are dangers. You know, we have a female mortality rate that's way too high for a country of our advanced technological standing. And so I feel as though in a lot of ways, trying to make better dads and advocate for a better parenting experience, you know, because I think parents function better when they communicate better. And when dads step up and recognize that they're co-parents in this situation, it's not about putting too much pressure on moms. And I want to stress that too. We are big fans of moms. Moms come and speak all the time. They're actually far more experienced with the influencer marketing angle than we are, because they've been at it longer. Mm-hmm. And there is a Mom 2.0 summit. They actually started 2 years before we did. And we grew out of Eve's rib, as the joke goes, because we, you know, at a time they began 2 years before we did, and or 3 years, I guess, because at their third conference in 2011, I mean, the time came to decide how we were going to involve dads into the overall programming. So at Mom 2.0 in New Orleans in 2011, there was an entire ballroom that I was brought in to program that was only dad content. Only dad spoke. This is the dad ballroom. This is where the dads are speaking. And it was standing room only every time, every one. So the time was like, well, you know, there were a lot of conferences who were changing the name from mom to parent, which was nice. But it still was still very, you know, the mostly, mom based. Pretty mom centric. And so we decided let's do something with the word dad in the title to make sure that dads are at the forefront of the discussion, because there are aspects of fatherhood that just don't relate to moms. And it's important to recognize that first and foremost, we're here to talk about dads and masculinity. And it's a really challenging time for a lot of reasons in terms of how people are viewing masculinity and how we have to decide to define it ourselves in order to move forward in the most healthy way possible.
Yeah. Yeah. And it, how great is it though, that you guys eventually split off, not that you're separate, but you split off into your own conference and created that and have a huge turnout every year. And it goes to show that change is happening and a lot to do with what you guys are doing to help males and what we see masculinity as, and in society. And that's, it's so great to kind of experience and see that. And that's one of the things too, that I'm envious of, because not all the time, you know, a lot of my friends are more in touch with their feelings and breaking down, you know, the mask of masculinity. But it's nice to see that folks go to get that together, whereas you don't have to like search for it as much, which is getting a little bit easier, I find, but it's nice to see that and see that it's grown that much, that there's that many people that want to make a change out there, dads and moms alike, because obviously the moms are supporting us in this as well, because they want to see this for the dads and their children as well. So,
well, plus it puts too much hassle on them. I mean, they don't want the bar to be unreasonably high, just as much as we don't want the bar to be unreasonably low.
Right.
Yes. You know, we're asking to be held to a higher standard, and that benefits everybody.
For sure. Absolutely. Yes. That's a great way to put it, and a great way to look at it. This is a great place for us to take a short break. Don't forget that the Dad Experience is a part of the Parents On Demand Network. You can catch our podcast on their app. You can get their app at the Google Play Store or the Apple iTunes Store. Stick around after this episode to hear about another great parenting podcast that, if you love the Dad Experience, we're sure you're going to like. So stick around after the break. More with Doug. Lots of great information. Super excited to continue this conversation. Welcome back to the Dad Experience. We're here with Doug French. Doug is a part of Dad 2.0. He's also a blogger, very involved parent, co-parenting. We talked about a little bit at the beginning of the break, but we're going to kind of continue that conversation about Dad 2.0. So since you started, and I think I kind of know the answer maybe to this question, but since you've started Dad 2.0 or been a part of starting it as a founder, has your parenting style changed or evolved since then? Or, you know, how has that changed you as being, you know, maybe from an attendee, but also from the founder standpoint, somebody that's really in the trenches making this happen?
Well, it's interesting you mentioned that, because one of these days I'd like to attend Dad 2.0.
I bet.
It's always been a challenge, because here I work, you know, 6 months a year putting together a conference that I'd love to attend and can't.
Yeah.
I mean, I attend everything, you know, bits and pieces. I hear, as a programming director, I want to see how every bit of programming goes, and I see a little bit of everything. But I think as far as my parenting goes, it's been, I think, opening up to the aspect that it is always about learning. I mean, I've been fortunate enough that I can devote my entire existence essentially to who I am as a father, because my job is exploring. I mean, when I, in the off season and the time, you know, when Dad 2.0 is over in the spring, I do a lot of reading, a lot of research, and meet with people who, you know, who would consider coming to speak, later in the, you know, put the planning very far in advance as best I can. In fact, I'll tell you, I had a great discussion with a friend of mine. He's in the information school at U of M, and he just published a report about the spectrum of masculinity as defined by analysis of about maybe 150,000 Reddit posts.
Hmm.
So it's all fascinating. And he's coming to Dad 2.0, by the way, to talk about his findings, how masculinity is evolving in this current, cultural climate. Which, as I've said, is an outcropping of how we, you know, who we are as men informs who we are as dads and as people and as writers and everything else. And I try to engage in as many broad themes as I can and tie them together in a way that it's at least seems somewhat coherent. So, I'm a half-time parent as well. I mean, the kids are old enough now so that, number one, I really like the fact that I work for myself and have done during my son's adolescence. So I was always around. I didn't have an office to go to. I didn't have a lot of traveling to do. And if I did, I could do it on days when the kids weren't with me. And I think, I think in the end, my parenting has evolved a bit just because I've embraced the idea that that so many things, so many existential threats, for lack of a better word, I guess there's just so much out there that could happen. And it's important, I think, more than anything else, it's important to learn how to take a punch, you know, to learn how to get back up again. And that's something that I've tried to teach my kids in a way that I think wasn't really so much taught to me. And I think that, and also growing up as a straight, white, cisgender WASP in the 80s and 90s, and seeing how dominant that part of the culture has been, and me being completely unaware of that. And I think now that I'm engaging with other people and other experiences that I could never have related to when I was a teenager and a smaller and a younger adult, really, I think, rounds me as a, I think being aware of the struggles other people are going to really puts my own in perspective. And it just, it energizes me a bit to know that we're all working hard to get through this, and we're succeeding and we're failing, but we're figuring it out, you know? And I think, that's just not something I was aware of as a younger man.
Right. And speaking of things that maybe you succeeded at or failed at as a younger man, or maybe as in through early parenthood into now, is there something you look back on now with all these great experiences that you've had and all this interaction with other fathers out there and other parents out there that you know, you kind of piggyback off each other, share information. Is there anything you look back on that you wish you would have done a little bit differently or changed moving forward as a parent? That maybe somebody else can learn from, that maybe they're going through something similar?
Well, you know, I think I don't think about regrets all that often, I have to say. I've gotten also really good at not dwelling on the past anymore. I mean, I was a real dweller on the past as a younger man. And I think if you can just – in fact, I one of the reasons I got into blogging was that I love the idea in Back to the Future of going back and meeting my parents as teenagers or as young adults, young marrieds in New York, you know, what their lives were like before I was even an idea. And so in many cases, if you write a blog and that your kids can read, that in many ways is the next best thing. And I have a number of things that I wrote. I mean, I had a blog that I wrote throughout, you know, my older son's first few years. And I have some essays that I've written that they've read. So I think, if I'd have done anything differently, I mean, obviously there's been a lot of mistakes that I've made, but I don't think I would have done anything different with the data I had at the time. Mm-hmm. You know, it's really easy to go back and be a revisionist historian and said, I shouldn't have done that. But the fact is, you know, I made a choice based upon what I knew, and I can't believe I would have done something differently if I'd had the chance again. So right. I don't give it much thought, frankly. But I do think, you know, if anybody does have any regrets, I think one of the overarching things that people think about is, look how successful this movement is. It's too late for me. I mean, even like about 6 weeks ago, we did a Fatherhood on Friday article about podcasting. And they are huge, and they've blown up, and it's become a joke now. Will you appear on my podcast? Is like, you know, it's supposed to be like the most annoying thing to hear at a cocktail party now. But the fact is, they're only just starting to get bigger. It's never too late to jump in feet first and figure out where your voice fits in the chorus. Mm-hmm. So I think from a professional level, I wish I'd started this conference earlier. But again, I did it when I did it, and I'm glad it exists. And I think, yeah. But there are people, if you're out there saying, you know, this business has moved beyond me. I'm too late to start a podcast. I'm too late to start a YouTube channel. I'm too late to start writing. I'll never write this book. Nonsense. It's absolute horseshit. You have to, if you have something to say, then say it. And I learned this because actually I went to a conference. I mean, I started this blogging in 2003, and I went, one of my favorite, personalities of the earlier, web domination when blogging first became to be a huge thing. And, his name is Anil Dash, and he, gave a piece about, how he went to South by Southwest in 1999 and saw all of these successful people who had created blogging platforms Nexus Loci for pop culture criticism. And they'd only, you know, in the days of Gawker and, mm-hmm. When blogging was first getting hot in New York, and he thought, wow, I'm late to the game. I'll never do anything. And this was in 1999. And here we are 20 years later. get started. Yeah. Do not think there's no room for you. There is always room for you.
Yeah, and people gravitate to different styles and different things that they're looking for. And that's what's so nice about with podcasting or YouTubing or even blogging, I would imagine, too, that people can sift their own content and find the best thing they can relate to, which is great. That's why you're right. You hit it nail right on the head, I think. And I don't know that I ever looked at it from that lens myself. But the more the better, because there's a place for everybody to be and be involved, and one fit, you know, one podcast may not be the same as another, but it may not be the best fit for each other, or blog or YouTube channel, or even just whenever we're streaming media on the internet. It's so important to have that out there. That's what makes, I think, that aspect of what we can do and the power of what we can do so great to help each other out with through the internet and through online and all that great stuff.
Well, I tell you, I'm inspired by, the show on Amazon Prime, Fleabag.
I watched the first season. I haven't gotten to the new one yet.
Well, it's absolutely brilliant. And you may have seen that she got a couple of Emmys, both for writing it and for acting in it. Mm-hmm. And, it's just an extraordinary piece of work. And it began as a throwaway idea. I mean, Phoebe Waller-Bridge talks about this, how she just had this idea to create this brief one-woman show in the Edinburgh Film Fringe Festival. And it was just an idea that that she performed. She just on a whim went out and performed it and improv'd a lot of it, wrote some of it. And then she built it and cultivated it, and it became a show at the Fringe Festival proper. And then it became, it's been in the West End. It's been a show in New York. And it became a television show that got two Emmys.
Yeah.
And so you never know where something monumental will grow when it has a really modest beginning. Mm-hmm. So, and the other thing too is, like, if you go into anything and say, I have to speak to a billion people, I mean, it's great if you can do that. But the main thing you have to be true to is yourself. And there is just as much virtue in having a very small, very networked group of followers and customers and whatever else, like kind of micro broadcasting, nano broadcasting. We're finding out now that if you see somebody with a billion followers, your first thought is like, about half of those are bought, or they're fake, or they're bots, or they're, you know, it doesn't ring true. And if you have a smaller engaged audience, that's actually much more powerful, and that's the return on investment that any brand is going to want from you, the idea that you're actually influencing and not just yelling out into the forest.
Yeah, and that's important to look at and remember. And it's, you know, this is why I do the Dad Experience. I'm learning so much more and changing my views all the time because I'm learning from people like you. So it's so great and refreshing to hear those things and motivating. And I'm sure that's the kind of stuff that folks are getting through Dad 2.0 and what they're learning from each other. You know, and it's really, really nice to hear that stuff is going on. So before I want to make sure our listeners get all the information they can about Dad 2.0 and how they can get there and be involved and be a part of that. We always like to, you know, close our show a little bit with things we can't wait to see through our children's eyes. And it could be something that already happened. It can be anything. The sky's the limit. But is there anything out there that you as a father, you could not wait to experience again or see through your children's eyes again, or just experience with your children as an adult now and sharing those experiences that maybe you went through or hope to have gone through? Is there something out there that you just really enjoy seeing through their eyes or have enjoyed seeing through their eyes?
You know, it's funny. My first thought is about, I mean, the boys and I watch a lot of movies, you know, especially when we're trapped indoors, you know, during the, one of the things we've adapted to as, you know, since we're, you know, housebound in the cold in Michigan, we watch a lot of films together. And so there are plenty of movies that I just can't wait to experience again and have them watch, just because of, I know, even something like, you know, when I first heard George Carlin, when I first heard Richard Pryor, I really love stand-up comedy. So I love to see, in general, just when you can make somebody think and laugh in that way, and also see that they may have the same sensibilities as you do, because it's fascinating to see how my son's senses of humor are evolving and how their sensibilities are evolving. So I think, and that's a shared experience as well, because if you can watch a movie and then sit back and talk about it for a half hour, which we always do, once we shut it off, we sit around and just, you know, kind of debrief about it. And that's a bonding experience. That's something that you can, you know, we're off our phones, we're not off in our separate cells, you know, we're interacting, and usually we'll go and we've usually cooked dinner together right before. So that's another thing I love to watch them do as well, is to watch them take over and cook meals, decide what they want, plan a menu. I mean, these are things that you want your kid to be able to figure out for himself. It's, you know, as they near adulthood. So I think, you know, there's that. And the last thing is, I think travel. You know, I've been lucky. I've done a lot of traveling this year, and a lot of the years is seeing things. And one of these years, in fact, hopefully in the spring, I'm going to take my son to London and show him. He's a big history buff, and he's not even a buff. He's a dork. He's a geek, and you know, in a much bigger way than I ever was. And so if I show him, you know, the Blitz Museum in London, or take him to where the British Museum and show him all the artifacts, he will freak out. I mean, I remember back in 2015, he came to me, and this is a little insight into what my son is like. He in 2015, my son was 12, and he said, "Dad, this is the 200th anniversary of the Battle of Waterloo, and they're doing this big thing over in Belgium. Can we go?" And I was like, first of all, wow. Because this kid is, you know, he's 12 years old. Who knows who wants to geek out about Waterloo when they're 12? and it just, I priced some things out, and we just couldn't afford it. I mean, the tickets were exorbitant, and we couldn't make it work. And, but I that sticks in my craw as something I wish I could have done for him that I can't. I mean, obviously it's a luxury to even think of taking your kid to Europe, but I would like to, take him someplace. I like to take both kids around to places. And I feel especially, it feels particularly time sensitive to do it with my older son. He's a teenager. He's going to want to break off on his own. He'll be 18 in March, and traveling with your dad will become much lamer for him very soon. So I still want to do that while he's still, it's even a possibility that he's into it.
Right, right. And travel, that's one of my things I've enjoyed. We've taken both of our kids. I have family in Malta, and it's one of the coolest experiences to go and visit the family over there and immerse ourselves in that culture and see how they thrive in that culture. And just to see that excitement when we land in this different place that's, you know, structurally different, and it's a different language and a different accent. And even at the young age that they're in, I love seeing that as well. It's pretty neat to do and experience with them. So I cherish those moments as well. So I hear you on that. I'm going to eat all that time up while I have them, and they're doing that.
You're right.
So
it's definitely, if you can just kind of shake them out of their doldrums a bit and have them, it helps you recalibrate when you can just see your own culture in the bold relief with another one and recognize, you know, it helps you break out of that adolescent narcissism that everything is like what you want,
right,
and what you experience and what you are. And it's just a big, great world. And I know he wants to see, they both want to see the world, but I think they want to see it more under their own terms, which means traveling with dad might be a tougher sell. So I'll have to just be like one stop behind on the train.
You know, they might surprise you. I can tell you this, I still love traveling with my parents. So, you know, and I caught that travel bug with them as a young child going myself to Malta and getting that experience. And we still try to. So you never know. You never know. They may still want to. Yeah, when I was in college, it might have been a little bit different, but they always come back around. So, or at least I did. So I should say, which is cool. So, you know, this is our time. I want our listeners, and I'm going to encourage them. I'm going to encourage myself too. I'm not going to, you know, I'm going to try and get there as well. Tell us how tell the folks how they can get to, you know, how they can get their tickets for Dad 2.0, how they can get involved. And maybe just let us know how to on social media, how to get to Dad 2.0 on social media or follow you. This sky's the limit. You can use this time for all those great things.
Oh, I appreciate that. Well, I guess the first term to remember is just Dad, the number 2, and Summit. That's our social handle for everything on Facebook, on Twitter, on Instagram. So that's how you can follow along. Facebook is much more of a community space. Instagram, we have a lot of great stories about fathers. There are so many fathers posting on Instagram now. It's look at the hashtag dadlife on Instagram, and you will see just hundreds of fathers of every type expressing love for their kids. And it's one of my favorite things to do. And just in an idle moment, I'll just browse and repost a lot of that stuff to our feed. And our Instagram stories are also along in that same vein. There's a Linktree link on Facebook, which links to everything else. You can listen to our own podcast. You can follow our Twitter feed, which has lots of great stories about what dads are doing for their kids. There's so much. There's a lot of bad news out there. And I think one of my favorite things to do is to try to counterbalance that with stories of a father who turned his kid's crib into a Millennium Falcon. Or there are a lot of great stories about fathers who had made these Halloween costumes out of these for their kids in wheelchairs.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, one dad turned his kid's wheelchair into a fighter jet. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's so much good stuff out there that you see it and you cry. You know, you see these tearful reunions of dads having been deployed and their surprise reunions. You know, they jump out of a closet. They the kid's blindfolded and, you know, he takes his blindfold off and runs into his arms. There's a lot of good news there. So so a lot of the news that we post on our Twitter feed becomes goes into our Fatherhood on Friday weekly digest of all the great dad news. And you can get tickets to Dad 2.0 as well through our on Eventbrite. We have there's a dad2.com/venue which will have the information about the Mandarin Oriental Hotel in DC, we're going to be in DC this year. We've discovered a pattern now. We were at the same place in 2016, so apparently presidential election years are a big time to go to DC, and and we like that because we are advocating some legislative change. I mean, you may have seen Dove Men Plus Care and Alexis Ohanian were in D.C. about a month ago talking to Marco Rubio and Kirsten Gillibrand and talking about how necessary it is to try and implement some level of paid leave. Let's make it easier for parents to have children. But yeah, it's Dad 2 Summit for all of your social media needs. And yeah, we hope to see you at this conference. I mean, we rerun the gamut. If you have social media aspirations, if you have fatherhood aspirations, writerly aspirations, and just to be a better person and meet some other guys who you really connect with. I mean, we're a great fraternity. I mean, these guys really, really enjoy each other's company. And there's all these great stories about who I met at Dad and at Dad 2.0 and what we did afterwards. One of my favorite things is when, someone says, "Hey, I met this guy at Dad 2.0 and now we're starting this thing together." You know, anytime the conference is an incubator of a new thing, that makes my entire week is made because that shows that there's a ripple effect that we're trying to have.
No, it's great. And it's all great stuff. And we'll make sure we put all that stuff in our show notes so folks can just go right in there and check everything out and follow you and get those tickets to Dad 2.0 Summit so they can experience all those great things. Well, I've learned so much myself today, Doug, by just having you on and talking to you. Your great wealth of knowledge. I really appreciate you finding the time today to sit down and talk to me as well as the Dad Experience audience.
Cool. Yeah, and I will see you December 5th.
Yes. I'm going to try and make it to the dad meet up here in Michigan.
Harass Adam into joining us.
I am, and I need to, and it's important. I think it's very important that I make it that way and find other like-minded dads in person, not just behind the microphone. So that is my goal as well. But thanks so much for being here. I appreciate all the things that you shared today.
Thanks a lot, Adam. It was a real pleasure, and I'm so grateful to be able to do this, and so thanks for having me on.
Oh, no problem. And if you have a question for me or maybe for Doug or, you know, a past guest or have a show idea or you yourself want to be on the show, send us an email, experienceanddad@gmail.com, or find us on social media just by searching the Dad Experience Podcast. You can find us on most major platforms. So until next time, thanks for listening to the Dad Experience.
This podcast is a proud member of Parents on Demand, a network of high-quality shows for families just like yours. Download our free network app on Apple and Android and listen to your favorite episodes.